Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. So we would like to extend a very warm welcome to all our guests who have come today for our Sunday feast program. I hope you all are as pleased to see me as I am pleased to see you. Hare Bol. There was once a film crew shooting certain sequences from their movie in a remote part of this country. And as they were about to shoot a particular sequence, suddenly a very old villager came there. And somehow or the other, he just happened to go right up to the director of the movie. And he said, "There's going to be heavy rains today." Now, the sky was sort of clear, so they weren't really sure as to what should be done. But lo and behold, within a couple of hours, there was a downpour, heavy rains. So they made a note of it, that this old villager had come. The next day they were again doing their shooting sequence. And the villager came and said, "Today there is going to be a huge storm." And the director this time did not feel that he should just let his warning go unnoticed. So he told his crew, "All right, wrap it up. Just in case if there's a storm, we shouldn't lose much equipment." And lo and behold, within a couple of hours, there was a storm. So the director was convinced, this is a very reliable meteorological office. Well, for the next few days and the week, the old villager was not to be seen. The week later also, he wasn't to be seen. Now, there was a very important sequence that they were about to shoot. A lot of energy, effort, and money was being put into this particular sequence, this particular shot. So the director wanted to be sure that there should not be any natural disturbances. So he sent some of his crew members go and find out where the old villager is. And after some time himself, because he was also feeling so uneasy, he himself went on this quest. So he searched far and wide and finally found the old villager in a distant part, in the fields. So he walked up to the villager and said, "Today we have a very important sequence, very important shot. Would you please tell us what are the predictions for today?" And the villager, he turned to him and said, "How do I know? The radio is broken." So, we are well into the monsoons. in India. And therefore we have taken this topic for today's discussion. Rainy season in Vrindavan. This has been described by Shukadev Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto. A very beautiful description of how after intense heat of the summer, rains have finally arrived in the land of Vrindavan. The summary of this chapter is, or the principle as to why Shukadev Goswami is describing this rainy season. Just imagine Shukadev Goswami is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, who's going to die maybe within a day or two. He had 7 days warning. So this is the 10th canto going on. 10th canto is one of the biggest cantos. So maybe he had another couple of days left. And suddenly Shukadev Maharaj goes into a romantic mood, you know. Let me describe you the rainy season in Vrindavan. This is not, it's a very intense period, so we expect, right? Just imagine we are on a deathbed and there are devotees all around and they're all chanting Hare Krishna, and one particular smart person, he comes and says, let me describe you the rainy season in Bombay. You're like, wait. I've seen many seasons like that in Bombay. But there's something very special about the rainy season in Vrindavan. And the premise is that just to enhance the description of Krishna's pastimes, Sri Shukadev Goswami is describing in this chapter the beauty of Vrindavan during autumn and the rainy season. In the course of his presentation, he gives various charming instructions in metaphorical terms. This is the 20th chapter of the 10th canto. And the chapter is divided into the description of two particular seasons. First, the rainy season, followed by the month of Sharada, or autumn season. From verse number 3 to verse number 31, there's a beautiful description of the rains in Vrindavan. Each of these verses is very instructional. There is an instruction in each of these descriptions. It is a metaphor. It is an analogy by which all of us can learn so many various lessons. So, we'll begin with verse number 3. The 10th canto, 20th chapter, verse number 3. Tatha pravartat pravrit sarvasattva samudbhava vidyottamana paridher vishvurjitana bhastala. Then the rainy season began, giving life and sustenance to all living beings. The sky began to rumble with thunder and lightning flashed on the horizon. Generally, after an intense summer, when the temperatures are quite high, when the rains come in, the first showers, there are these dense clouds that suddenly well up in the sky. And there is this intense rumbling sound as if the clouds are running after or rushing after each other to be first within that particular region. There's a lot of crashing among the clouds which comes forth as thunder. And because there is friction created between them, there's intense lightning also. And generally, this lightning is not exactly overhead, but we see it coming over the horizon, over the kshitija. We can see it right there, with the skies meeting the earth. We can see the lightning flashes going down on the horizon. So this is how the rains arrived in Vrindavan. So Shukadev Maharaj says that in this way, this entire sky was covered by dense blue clouds, accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus, the sky and its natural illumination are covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature. The sky is pristine blue in color, very clear, and no one can miss the blue sky. It's there for all of us to see. Anyone, everyone can see the blue sky. Suddenly these dense dark clouds are coming and they will cover the sky. And there will be intense thunder and lightning also. So within this particular verse, or this particular description, the clouds along with thunder and lightning have been compared to the three modes of material nature. The clear blue sky is compared to the pure spirit soul. By its constitutional natures, the spirit soul or Atma is always pure, very clear, very clean. But then the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, they disturb the consciousness of the pure spirit soul. And as soon as the consciousness of the pure spirit soul is disturbed, one gets covered by the three modes. And thus, the pure nature or the quality of the soul is now reflected through the maze, through the haze, through the covering of the three modes of material nature, just as the pristine blue sky during the first rains is covered by dense clouds with thunder and lightning. Lightning is compared to the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is illuminating, lightning also illuminates. However, lightning is dangerous. Just because it looks so attractive and it illuminates the sky, it doesn't mean that one should go and shake hands with lightning. It's not really very much, advised to do that. But then, behind the lightning comes this rumbling thunderous sound, the thunder of the clouds. That is the mode of passion. Always thunderous, always there's a lot of passion involved. There's so much of energy there. And finally, the clouds cover the entire sky, and the clouds are compared to the mode of ignorance. So goodness, passion, and ignorance, they completely cover the pure spirit soul, such that the purity of the soul is only seen as a reflection through these coverings. At the same time, the soul is disturbed because of these coverings. There was a small child living with its parents in the city of Bombay, going to one of its prestigious schools. Since the school was only a short distance away and the child wanted to be independently, didn't want the parents to be seen along with it. So the child said, "I will go along to school. I don't want you, mom and dad, coming with me." So they agreed. So he used to go to school on his own. The father used to go to work downtown Bombay, somewhere at Nariman Point. The mother would be freelance. Sometimes she would do some work. Mostly she would stay at home as a housewife. So one particular day, when the afternoon had just passed, there was suddenly this dense, dark clouds, ominous looking. They covered the sky and a storm blew up. And there were predictions that there was going to be heavy downpour. And there was this winds were really blowing very fiercely. So the mother looked at the watch and she knew that this was the time the school is going to be, get over. So she was concerned as to how her child is going to come back. So she, with lot of trepidation, with lot of fear in her heart, she waited out the moments and the time of the child's being at home came and it went. It was getting a little late. She was getting all the more concerned. What happened to my child? So she took out her car. She was in a hurry and she went towards the school. Suddenly, in the distance, she finds her child walking down the road. The bag behind on his back, very casually sauntering around, you know, coming along. And there's this huge winds and clouds. And suddenly there would be thunder and there would be lightning. And whenever there would be thunder and lightning, the child would stop. Because the thunders are very, you know, the thundering sound of the clouds are very fearful. So the child would stop and look up at the sky and give a big smile. Then start walking again. Now this was very shocking to the mother because she sees a child walking down as if, you know, this is a picnic. There's a storm there. And whenever there was thunder and lightning, he would just stop, you know, in different poses, sometimes like this and smile, sometimes this way and smile, sometimes adjust his tie. And so the mother comes up to him, rolls down her car window and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "Mom, today someone is clicking so many pictures of me. I'm striking poses." So, although this appears to be very childlike, but this is what ignorance is all about. But the child is thinking we are very intelligent. So, intelligence is the nature of the spirit soul. Spirit soul is naturally intelligent. But this intelligence, when reflected through the three modes, results in foolishness. And that is what this verse explains. Then, the next thing that is being explained by Shukdev Maharaj in the next verse is something related with the sun. Already the clouds, thunder and lightning have been explained. Now he is going to explain something relationship with the sun. With its rays, the sun had for 8 months drunk up the earth's wealth in the form of water. Now that the proper time had arrived, the sun began releasing this accumulated wealth. So, the water contained on the planet Earth is herein called as the wealth of the Earth. And definitely, water is a very important ingredient. Right? All of us need water to survive. It is so very important. Nowadays, they are discussing that maybe because of so much strife and distrust in human society, then and also the shortage of water, the next war will be over water reservoirs, right? Water lakes and rivers. Fights are going to be about who's going to control the water supply. So water is the wealth of the earth. And what does the sun do? The sun, 8 months of the year, is simply taking up all of this wealth. Right? It is drinking up all this water. And then, when the time comes, when it is essential for the earth in its various parts to receive water, the sun very profusely, after taking up all the water and converting it into clouds, the sun makes the clouds pour down these waters back onto the earth. Similarly, the king or the government of a particular country is supposed to be like the sun in terms of collecting taxes from its citizens. Taxes are nothing but the wealth of the citizens. We are engaged in industry or agriculture or any other occupation. Using the facilities of the king's kingdom or the government's property, and the government exacts taxes from us. However, the reason for taking taxes is that In times of need, not just need, but whenever it is necessary and whatever is required, the government does that in terms of public welfare, in terms of education, in terms of health. It provides facilities to the citizens. On one's own, just think, can I establish a hospital? I can't, but the government can collect taxes and establish a hospital for all the citizens in various places. Just as a sun can collect water from one place and distribute it in so many other places in the form of rains. So, it is the function or it is the duty of the government to exact taxes and also provide beneficial work for its citizens. However, what the government should not be doing is that collect taxes and squander it only for its own whims and fancies. In today's world, the word tax has a very different meaning. Everyone is trying to avoid taxes today, isn't it? Because no one is sure that if they pay their taxes, whether it will come back to them in the form of some public welfare work or not. There was once a juice center. And there was this very, very hefty man there, very, very powerful person who used to extract juices from oranges and other fruits like that, apple and all such fruits. But his specialty was, he would take a fruit like an orange and with his raw hands, he would squeeze out every single drop of juice that is there within that fruit. Just squeeze it out. In fact, his regular customers, they put forth a bet worth 1,000 rupees. If after our man has squeezed out the fruit, if any other person can squeeze out even one drop after he has finished, then that person who can squeeze out even one drop from that fruit remnant will be given 1,000 rupees cash. So free money, everyone had a try, Everyone said, all right, let's go to the juice center. So big, small, hefty, powerful, strong, all kinds of people would come, and after the juice maker would finish off squeezing one particular half fruit, then they would try their effort, and try as they might, they could not even draw out another drop of liquid from those fruits, those remnants. This went on for a couple of days. Then one particular day, a very small, scrawny looking man, very thin, someone unnoticeable, he walks out from behind the crowd and says, let me have a try. And people are looking like, kahan se aa jate hain log? Where do people, who does he think he is? So anyways, it's a free country, right? So everyone has a right. So he comes up, very scrawny looking man, very thin, short, If you just go, maybe he'll fly away. Like that. Just trying to give you an image. So he walks up, he takes the fruit that has been squeezed out completely. And within his palm, he squeezes it and draws one and two drops and three drops. And finally, six drops of liquid juice from that fruit remnant. And everyone is shocked. They ask him, do you do some yoga, Ramdev Baba? You drink something, some energy drink? What do you do? Who are you? Are you some bodybuilder or something? He says, no, I'm a tax collector. So that is not what a king is supposed to be according to this analogy. Not simply squeeze out after everything is, you know, completely squeezed out anyways. But the king is supposed to exact taxes. Exact means take that which is rightful in the form of taxes and then use it for protection of the citizens, for the welfare of the citizens, so on and so forth, just as the sun does the same with the water on the surface of the earth. The next verse, Shukdev Maharaj is saying, flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept about by fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of the world. While commenting on this, Srila Prabhupada, he writes something very, very touching, very nice in this analogy. He says, here the clouds are compared to being very compassionate beings. Yes, we know the clouds have a lot of water and they distribute water. So therefore, they are definitely compassionate. However, what is the nature of their compassion? Clouds are not like people staying in metropolitan cities in the age of Kali Yuga. At the whims and fancy, people decide, today we will do this. Today we will not do that. As if it's just a switch on button, they switch on and switch off. Today I like doing this, so I'll do this. Today I don't like, I will not do. Right? Especially in the metropolis, you find people behaving just like that. They're so self-centered. I like, I don't like. I work, I don't work. Like that. And it's like, today I want to take a bath, I turn on the tap. I don't want to take a bath, I just keep it off. Something like that. So their emotions, their interactions are just like that. It is all so very mechanical and so at the turn of a switch. But clouds are not like that. Clouds don't come, from the Arabian Sea. Today let us go over Bombay and pour rains. Tomorrow let us go into Karachi. They don't do like that. Clouds don't come half the way to Bombay and say, "Arey, rasta bhul gaya." They don't come half the way and say, "Aaj mood nahi hai. No, I'm not in the mood right now. Let me go to some other place." No. So when do the clouds come in? When there is desperate need and people are really feeling the heat. And they're like, oh, come on, even the AC is not working now. The humidity is, it's really very troublesome. It's painful. And then the clouds come, the fresh winds blow in. And everyone is out like, ah. That is compassion. When there is an intense need to be free from the sweltering heat, when there is tremendous urgency, that is when the clouds come in and pour rain. Just like a rich man, somehow or the other feeling very much concerned with the dire needs of the people around him, just opens up his pockets, just opens up his treasury and says, all right, here, take this. Here, take that. Here, take this money. Here, take that blanket. This just distributes freely. Seeing just the dire needs of the people around, just distributes it so freely. Similarly, the clouds, they distribute the wealth that they're carrying in the form of water. And they do it till they're totally exhausted. They give off everything that they have. And Srila Prabhupada gives he gives a reference from the Ramayana. Just one point from the Ramayana. He says, The father of Ramchandra, Maharaj Dasharath, was known to be very strict with his enemies. And what was his strictness? He would deal with his enemies and punish them. Not just punish them, but actually stop them in their efforts, in their endeavors. Just as a farmer would uproot weeds from his fields. Similarly, he would remove his enemies from his path. And as anxious or as proficient, expert he was in removing his enemies from his path, so was he very charitable. As charitable, as expert in charity. And how was he charitable? He was as charitable as the clouds. That is the explanation given. Just as he would punish his enemies with great expertise, similarly, he would, with lot of love and a compassionate and open heart, he would give in charity, just as the clouds would give in charity. In this particular example, clouds are, if those of you who can see on the screen, please see that the clouds, they are compared to, you know, it is as if they are persons. They are being shaken by the winds. Right? There is lightning and the great clouds are shaken and swept about by the fierce winds. So the metaphor is that lightning, because there is light, light means one can see. So a compassionate person sees the despair and the distress of the people around. And seeing their great distress, there are emotions welling inside the compassionate person. He feels very emotional. The compassionate person becomes very, very emotional. And such emotions, such increase of emotions is expressed by heavy breathing. Like that. As if one is being impelled by fierce wind, movements of air. So clouds, because they are compassionate people, when they see the despair of all the people suffering from the heat, and how do they see? Because of the lightning. Then they feel very much concerned and the wind shakes them. They are shaking because of their emotions. And finally, they give benefit. The next analogy is, or the next item that is being discussed is the earth. We've covered the sun, we've covered the clouds. Now, Sukhdev Maharaj will be explaining something relationship to the earth. The earth had been emaciated by the summer heat, but she became fully nourished again when moistened by the god of rain. Thus, the earth was like a person whose body has been emaciated by austerities undergone for a material purpose, but who again becomes fully nourished when he achieves the fruit of those austerities. So during the summer intense heat, the earth is totally burnt. All the vegetation is gone. The trees are really dried and shriveled up. The shrubs are all black and burnt from the heat. The earth is parched up. Sometimes she is cracked. And looking at the earth, if one looks at the earth from a distance away, she appears to be very clean and thin, very weak. And then the rains come and the water falls on the earth and she soaks in all the water. And slowly all the cracks disappear. And her open surface is now covered with lush green grass. There's greenery everywhere. And it's as if, and there are insects and there are bees and there are birds. It's as if it's a festival. It's as if she has now become, she has been nourished by the water and she has now become very healthy and happy once again. Just as Sometimes people engage in austerities for an ulterior purpose. They may do so many austerities, they may do so many fasts. No, every Tuesday, every Thursday, every Saturday. For a year, for 2 years. And at the end of the fasting period, they become really very thin. They are really very weak. Right? And suddenly, the fast has come to an end. And there's a huge feast. And then they are, you know, eating. They are having a nice feast. And nourishment reaches them. They become robust again. There's luster back. Just as you see here, the yogi is doing tapasya. Finally reaches his goal. And then you see, now he's got a very beautiful luster, very healthy. There is a catch. This is an example from the those who follow the Christian religion. For them, once one leaves one's body, one dies, then one goes to heaven. Right? And at heaven, there are the angels, especially there is Peter waiting at the door of heaven because Jesus has given him the key to the door of heaven. So he'll always be waiting there. And he'll be waiting for, you know, the people who come there and ask them, so what have you done? What are your good credits? Let me see in my book whether everything is all right or not, and then let us in. Like that. So there was a very, very rich man, but throughout his life, he never used much of his wealth. He always stored it, stored. So a lot of wealth. And finally, one day he was told, you're going to die. So he approached his priest and he wanted to give his confession and told the priest, hey priest, I have one small request, please. I have so much of wealth with me. And I know that we have to leave everything behind. Now, can I take some wealth with me to heaven? Little of this. I have so much of gold. The priest said, it's not possible. You cannot take anything of this world there. And he said, thoda sa. Kuch karo na aap. Please do something, you know. You have a direct hotline connection with God. So, if you can, please make some arrangements with him. Tell him whatever you can, but allow me to take some of this wealth. You know, I've accumulated this wealth for so long. I have to leave everything here. Let me carry some of it. So the priest, seeing his intensity, he said, all right. So he went into prayer and he had a communion with God. And God said, all right, only this time he can bring some wealth. So the priest told him, he was very happy. He said, thank you, Father. And then he got his big, but the priest told him, just one bag, huh? That's all. So he got his biggest bag and filled it with all gold biscuits, you know, like that. Packed his bag. He died. And there he was at the gate of heaven with his bag. And Peter stopped him and said, hey, wait. No baggage allowed. On this flight, no baggage allowed. He said, no. I got special permission. Please ask God. Peter was surprised. So he was so surprised. He said, all right, let me ask. So he asked and he said, all right, only one carry-on. Only one bag allowed, so... But I have to check. There has to be, you have to go through security. Check in. So I have to check the bag. What is there in it? So Peter opens the bag. And the bag obviously contains all the gold that he has. He opens the bag and says, oh, you brought pavement. Pavement means, you know, those on the roads you use those bricks. So he says, so you brought pavement here. So the idea is, that people undergo so many austerities for a material benefit. And when they get the material benefit, ultimately, what is it in the eyes of someone who's spiritually advanced? Just pavement. Carry this huge bag, get concession also to carry it into heaven. And finally, what is its worth? is just pavement. It may be gold to us, but it is pavement. That's all it's worth. So, tapasya, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, should be done for a higher goal, for a higher purpose. And the higher goal is to be Krishna conscious. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhed brahma saukhyam. For brahma sukh, it has to be for pleasure in Krishna consciousness. To achieve that, one has to do austerities. So the next thing that Shukdev Maharaj is explaining is the twilight time in the rainy season. You know, the sun or the day is ending, the night is about to begin. Twilight zone, but the sky is still covered with clouds. So in the evening twilight, during the rainy season, the darkness allows the glowworms, but not the stars, to shine forth. Just as in the age of Kali, the predominance of sinful activities allows atheistic doctrines to overshadow the true knowledge of the Vedas. This is one of the peculiar qualities of the rainy season, especially at the twilight time. Not in Bombay, because anyways in Bombay, no one is sure when is light, when is twilight. Actually, sometimes you may hear the cocks crowing even in the middle of the night because they are bewildered with all these luminous lights on Marine Drive. It happens. No, it's true. I'm not joking. It is a joke because it's very rare to hear cocks in Bombay anyways. But sometimes you can hear them. Or sometimes you hear here in a temple at around 2 o'clock, we may hear the cuckoo bird calling out for its mate. 2 o'clock, don't they have to sleep? I mean, in the villages, they sleep until 4 at least. It is early morning. At Usho, there when they give out their call. But here they are confused. So in Bombay, this won't make sense. But just go a little out of Bombay. Take a train during the rainy season towards the evening time and go towards Karjat or go towards Kasara. And just get off the station for, take that risk. Be adventurous. Please don't do that in Bombay. But outside Bombay, it's all right to be a little adventurous. And just go into the wilderness. And then we'll see this phenomenon. As the twilight time comes in, suddenly one finds all these jugnus come, you know, all these fireflies or the glowworms, they appear. Suddenly they appear like that. And the immediate reaction is to catch one of them, you know. And you catch, you put out your hand and suddenly the light is gone. And you open your hand, and there you see a small flick of, you know, speck of light. Go on, go off. Go on, go off. And it's so mesmerizing to see that. Because when it goes off, you see a very ugly creature, insect on your hand. Which you'd never ever hold in your hand. But when it is on, it's so very attractive. Once one glowworm asked another glowworm, what did you have for food today? The answer was, a very light meal. L-I-G-H-T. Light means, you know, bulb, light bulb. So they had a very light meal, so very like that. Anyways. So in the age of Kali, the analogy is that during the rainy season only it happens. Or sometimes you may just see them just before the rains. The glowworms coming in. The sky is overcast. It's dark. It's almost dusk now. You look into the sky and you will not see any stars shining. The moon is also not to be seen. But then the glowworms are seen everywhere. There's lot of light. But the sum total of that light results in nothing. Nothing gets illuminated by the glowworms, except in cartoons. No, someone will make a cartoon and they need a light in a cave, they catch a glowworm and they put it. And suddenly there's light in the cave. Never happens. It never happens. Practically, it is false. Because they do not have sufficient light. They simply glow. But that light is not sufficient to even illuminate a small area around them. It just attracts the eyes. That's it. But in the absence of the stars, these tiny stars close to us appear very attractive. And you say, hey, dek, light. Light? This is just some flicking going on. It's not exactly light means which allows us vision. That is what is light. The sun's light, the moon's light, the light of the stars. We can see some distance. We can see the road in front of us. Not with the glowworms. In fact, if we look at the glowworms, we may fall into a ditch because we do not see the ditch. We are seeing the glowworms. So this is in Kali Yuga, everything is covered by the cloud of ignorance. And these atheistic and self-proclaimed gurus, they appear like small glowworms. And people are very much attracted by their philosophy. They have no philosophy, actually. Someone spoke, you know, one man came out of a public program in a hall and he said, the speaker was speaking for 2 hours on zero. How can anyone speak on zero? And so, all right, and what did you understand? Nothing. Because zero means zero, right? Nothing. So the whole 2 hours was gone in understanding nothing. And this is philosophy. But it seems very attractive. Why? Because it's like a glowworm. So in Kali Yuga, many such personalities become very prominent. On the other hand, the stars and the moons who actually illumine the path of life by following the Vedic philosophy, by who are very well versed in the Vedic philosophy, they are covered, not really observable. And people get distracted by the glowworms. So just as in the cage of Kali, the predominance of sinful activities, and why, what covers our vision from all of these, you know, very glowing personalities? The predominance of sinful activities. And Srila Prabhupada explains, predominance of sinful activities means the rapid advancement made in material civilization. The rapid advancement, the rapid progress that we are making in material advancement allows us so many facilities. People who would not sow in their sanctity of their house and their homes or even their villages or their society, which they would not consider doing, they very easily do when they are in an environment of economic development. Because that is the norm. That is what is to be done. In their homes, they may not even have a rice brew, rice water brew. If it tastes a little bit odd, they'll throw away the rice water. But in a club, they may have a peg or two. Very easily. And what is it considered to be? A sign of advancement. Elite class people. You want to belong to the elite class? You want to have access to the lounge facilities? Then you have to be trained in all of these adverse cultures or activities. So this covers even our desire to approach those who have real knowledge. However, there is still a chance. And what is a chance? Even when the clouds are totally covering the sky, there are some brief moments when the clouds part for a minute or two, and one can visualize the sparkling stars shining forth. Similarly, in this age of Kali, this age of intense darkness, the clouds have parted now to reveal the moon of Lord Chaitanya and his movement, which has come to save all of us. This Harinam Sankirtan movement. This is a brief moment of parting of the clouds in Kali Yuga, where we can approach the Supreme Absolute Truth with ease and accept it and perfect our lives. So this is the glory of the Harinam Sankirtan, or the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The next thing explained by Shukdev Maharaj is frogs. Because frogs are also an entity that are very much linked with the rains. How many of us here, please, you may raise your hands. It's all right in response to this question. How many of us here have heard frogs croaking when the rains come? How many haven't ever? Never heard a frog croaking when the rains come? This is Kali Yuga, what can be done? This is proof. I mean, frogs are everywhere. But there is a common mistake that all of us make. Frogs don't croak when the rains come. Frogs start croaking as soon as thunder is heard. And they croak more after the rains stop. But when the rains are there, everyone is silent. This is a common misconception. We think frogs croak when the rains come. But they croak, they start croaking as soon as thunder is heard, because they know rains are going to come now. And they are very happy to hear the thunder. So the frogs, who had all along been lying silent, suddenly began croaking when they heard the rumbling of the rain clouds. In the same way that Brahmana students who perform their morning duties in silence begin reciting their lessons when called by their teacher. The nature of students or young people is that they don't like to wake up early enough. Anyone, either they are young by age or they may be old but think that they are young. In general, everyone doesn't like to wake up early, but student life means one has to wake up early and perform certain duties as a student. So what is it that wakes up the student? A student, like, what is it that makes student come early enough to school? It's a school bell. So similarly, in an institution or an ashram, students will wake up when there is a bell, or specifically when the spiritual master gives a call. All right, Uttishtha, wake up. Come and sit for class. So they wake up, they wash themselves, and they come and begin their lessons loudly chanting the mantras. Right? Just as frogs who have been lying silent as soon as you hear the thunder. So thunder here is compared to the call of the spiritual master or the teacher. Similarly, this is the age of Kali Yuga. And great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, they come forth and they give the clarion call. That wake up, sleeping souls. Like Lord Chaitanya comes and says, Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago. And hearing that, those who are good students, they all wake up. And then they perform the necessary rituals, specifically the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. There was once a sadhu who had a friend, and one day this friend was having a problem. The problem was that they needed to get some funds out of their institution, out of their treasury, and the friend had the numbers of the lock. He knew that, but somehow the combination wasn't working and the friend was really getting desperate. So after a lot of tries, in exasperation, he just gave up and he was holding his head. So this sadhu, in a very dignified way, walks up straight to the lock, holds it, you know, in a very mystical way, looks up into the sky, chants something, and confidently turns the lock in various combinations, and the lock clicks open. So the friend is amazed. Oh my God, this is a miracle. I mean, he just came up, he looked up to God, there was some communication, and click, the lock opened. So he said, you are great. And he said, no, wait. The combination number is written on the ceiling. That is all I did. So similarly, all the great acharyas are doing is revealing the scriptures. That's it. But those who do not understand that, out of sentimental values, you know, the sentimental emotion, they say, my acharya is great, this acharya is not so great. But the clarion call is simply because words are written there on the ceiling, the scriptures. They read it very clearly and open the lock. The next verse explains about streams and rivulets. With the advent of the rainy season, the insignificant streams which had become dry begin to swell and then stray from their proper courses, like the body, property and money of a man controlled by the urges of his senses. During the rainy season, suddenly you find, you know, all these nalas and small streams, suddenly they are full. And if one is really not careful, then one may find oneself at the wrong end of the stream. Right? Like once we had gone for a yatra to South India, especially at the place where the Bay of Bengal meets with the Indian Ocean. Now the Bay of Bengal is a very silent terror. That is what the Bay of Bengal is known as, a silent terror. Very calm, very placid, as if no danger at all. But when the tide comes in, it comes in so slowly and so fast that if one is way inside, then one is in grave danger. So this is what happened to some of us. You know, we were at a time when it was low tide, so we were walking along and we were trying to reach the waters as close as we could to the Bay of Bengal. And 15 minutes passed, half an hour passed, and suddenly water came surging in. The tide was coming in. There were no waves. The tide just came in. And suddenly we found ourselves ankle deep in water. And within minutes it was knee deep water. And then the very land that we had covered, this sandy track that we had covered, when we had covered it, we had gone through ups and downs. That's how the shore was. It wasn't plain. There were ups and downs. Somewhere it was hollow, somewhere it was up. Now everything was covered with water. So one place may be knee deep, but as soon as you put your foot ahead, you could go waist deep or maybe more. So very, very stressful situation. A little fearful too. Right? So this is what happens during the rainy season. All of a sudden you find streams appearing from nowhere and they are with gushing water. It's as if they're full of water. They're full of life. Small streams and rivulets, they form. You know, like in Bombay, you may find this entire street, KM Munshi Marg, like a stream. Full. And suddenly, you know, like once, when a couple of years back, downtown Bombay, right from Fort onwards towards VT, chest deep water. Now just go to Fort now, you know, that area. And imagine, how can chest deep water be here? But people experienced it. There was chest deep water. Suddenly flash floods. So similarly, what happens is that sometimes people may appear to be less on the economic front, dry. They may not have enough money, enough wealth or opulence. And somehow or the other, you know, something just hits. Maybe they get a lottery, they get some money, somebody just, they inherit something. They have a lot of wealth. Right? And then they show off their opulence. They really, like, they go all out trying to enjoy. Just like the streams, the brooks, you know, when the rains come in, they suddenly come to life. And they not only, they just don't flow within their course, but sometimes, in a very, very naughty way, they may leave their course and go down another course. Right? As if trying to create disturbance for, you know, some children who are playing there. That is what they may do. Suddenly the water may come in a, down a different course, a different path. However, as soon as the rains stop, the streams disappear. Similarly, people who come into some wealth or opulence all of a sudden, like rainwater within a stream, as soon as the wealth is gone, they are dried up. That is compared to a person with uncontrolled urges of the senses. Because of uncontrolled urges of the senses, as soon as the opportunity is there, they try to enjoy. However, they do not realize that very soon all the facilities is going to come to an end. For that which is born, death is certain. For that which is dead, birth is certain. Know this to be true, O son of Kunti. This is the Bhagavad Gita. It states, there was a young child who was walking down to school, came way late, way late. So the teacher asked him, "What happened, Johnny? Why did you come late?" Let's not say Johnny, let's say Amit. "What happened, Amit? Why did you come late?" He said, "Teacher, I am not at fault. I just followed the signs." "Signs? What signs?" "Oh, there are signs there. School ahead, go slow." So I walked slow. So this is someone with uncontrolled senses. They justify that now we have money. Abhi paisa hai, maja karo. Kal kisne dekha hai? Sabne dekha hai. Kal dekha tha, aage ka kal bhi dekhenge. Sab dekhenge. All of us are going to see. So an intelligent person is not bewildered by such small streams and rivulets suddenly forming. The next description is little poetic. It's really Sukhdev Maharaj's poetry, his poetic mood is coming out. The newly grown grass made the earth emerald green. This is so beautiful. The Indragopa insects added a reddish hue, and white mushrooms added further color and circles of shade. Thus the earth appeared like a person who has suddenly become rich. You know, suddenly a person becomes rich, gets denim jeans, black t-shirt, black goggles, a cap, and looks hopeless. Because the concept of enjoyment is not really properly understood. But here we can see Mother Earth, she's lush green like emeralds. And there are these red insects decorating her green. Green on red, red on green, it's beautiful. Try it out on a canvas. Make it green and put red dots on it. Looks very beautiful. And then white umbrellas, umbrella-like mushrooms. It is as if the earth has become a queen now. And just as people of royal order, they have their pristine white umbrellas over them. And they have so many soldiers well decorated, catering to them and their servants. Similarly, earth has decorated herself so very beautifully. With their wealth of grains, the fields gave joy to the farmers. But those fields created remorse in the hearts of those who were too proud to engage in farming and who failed to understand how everything is under the control of the Supreme. This is a very common phenomenon. As soon as there are heavy rains in Bombay, people really start cursing. Kya khali Bombay mein girna hai kya? Jidhar chahiye udhar girta nahi. This is because we don't understand that rains, earth needs, earth gives grains we eat. We think grains comes from the baniya ka dukaan, you know, or maybe from the mall. Right? And therefore anything which disturbs our happiness in terms of going to the mall, going to the beach, having a nice day in the form of heavy rains, we are not very, very happy with it. So although farmers are very joyful when heavy rains are there, similarly, or at the same time, there are those who have no connection with farming, with the land. They have no idea how important land is. For them, the only importance is the trains and the buses or their cars. But all of these, they will only function when the driver is there who eats the grains. And the grains come from the earth. Earth needs water. So there are people who will never understand that how everything in nature is God's gift and He is a supreme controller. They are always against the supremacy and controllership of God. Like once an atheist was invited by a spiritual person and they were having a boat ride on a lake. And both of them were rowing. They had oars in their arms, both of them. And they were rowing in the same direction. Suddenly, the atheist lost one of his oars, just slipped out of his hand. And since the boat was going ahead, the oar was left behind. So the spiritual personality simply got up, put his foot outside the boat, and started walking on the water. Went to the oar, picked it up, came back walking over the water, sat in the boat, and gave the oar back to the atheist. And the atheist is like, okay. So the atheist finishes his boat ride, comes back and meets up with his friends and he says, I don't believe that guy. He doesn't even know swimming. They can never appreciate the gifts of God, the miracles that God creates or gives us in the form of His natural gifts. Never can they accept the supremacy or the controllership of God. Always find a way about something that allows them to be independent. Srila Prabhupada, while explaining this, he says, the administration of the arrogant and ignorant who are too proud to obey the laws of God or too ignorant to recognize them will always cause frustration amongst the people. Whereas a God-conscious government will provide abundance and happiness for all. All the creatures, this is the next mention. This is where the point of devotees is being put forth. As all the creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing, just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Once Srila Prabhupada was trying to explain that how Krishna consciousness is so very beneficial, and he said, all these boys and girls, they were also dirty. They are very beautiful bodily features. But because they had no connection with Krishna, they were unhealthy and dirty. But now because they have taken up to Krishna consciousness, they are eating prasad, they have become very beautiful, very healthy. And specifically, when they put on devotional clothes and put on tilak, they look like men and women from Vaikuntha. So, just as all the creatures of the land and water become happy when the rains are there and they become very much well nourished and attractive. Similarly, a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Then again, Shukdev Goswami, he mentions or he gives us a slight warning. He says, Just as in the rainy season, when the rivers which are full of waters, they enter into the ocean. The place where they enter the ocean becomes agitated by very, very powerful waves. There's a lot of agitation there. Similarly, an immature yogi becomes agitated because he is still tainted by lust and attached to the objects of sense gratification. Yoga is a process by which one can control the senses, definitely. That is what yoga is meant to do. Control the senses and connect oneself with God. However, till the time the senses are totally controlled and one has communion with Krishna or with God, there will be traces of our passions remaining within our consciousness. And if one is not careful, then these traces of passion that are there, they may well up. Just as rivers well up with rainwater, they may well up with desires and they may agitate the consciousness. Just to give you a small example, a teacher once asked a boy, your essay on the dog is the same as your brother's. He says, yes, teacher. Then why did you copy your brother's? She says, no, I did not copy. We have the same dog. That is how passions are. Very, very, they do not appear to be dangerous. And an immature yogi may sometimes think that I have controlled my passions, my consciousness is clear. However, at the moment when one is really not alert, these passions, they come surging and may agitate the ocean of our heart, of our consciousness. Just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. Rivers disturbed. When the rivers well up and they meet the ocean gets disturbed. The mountains is repeatedly beaten by the torrential downpour. But the mountain does not think, either both the cliff, let me change my place, you know. Let me leave, go some to some. No, doesn't. Just stays there. Not only stays there, but when the waters fall, all the dirt that has gathered because of the mud and earth flying around, all that settles down, it is washed away. And the mountain looks beautiful, clean. Similarly, devotees whose minds are constantly absorbed in the Supreme Lord in service, there may be so many disturbances or they may stay in the material world. But because of the absorption of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything, all the dirt is washed away and they look beautiful, they are clean. A disciple once came up to his teacher who was teaching him some yogic postures. Teaching Ashtang Yoga, and he said, this is so difficult sitting like this and with the knees all bent and sitting straight, back is paining, my knees are paining, my back is paining. And the teacher said, don't worry, it will pass. He said it so confidently that the student said, all right, master, I'll accept. After a week's time, the student comes back to the master and says, my mind is so peaceful. I feel, my body feels so light. Everything is so nice. And the master said, don't worry, it will pass. So it is not a question of whether one is feeling peaceful or whether one is feeling disturbed. The idea is to be absorbed in service. Such absorption allows us to be free from the dirt or to be cleansed of the dirt of dualities. Good, bad, honor, dishonor, so on and so forth. During the rainy season, the roads not being cleansed become covered with grass and debris and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that Brahmanas no longer study and have that does become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time. During the rains, sometimes the pathways become so overgrown, especially trails, you know, pagdandi, they become so overgrown that one is fearful of going down that path. Pata nahi saap rahega, kya hoga nahi. So one does not want to walk that path because of some unknown fear, danger. Similarly, when one does not regularly recite scriptures, then the path of knowledge that has been illumined by the scriptures becomes overgrown or covered. And not only that, but in this instance becomes corrupted. Or some different meanings are eschewed out of the same principles. Though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, moved from one group of clouds to another, like lusty women unfaithful even to virtuous men. Virtuous men have the capability of not only leading themselves to the proper goal, but they can carry a lot of people, their family or even their society, their extended relatives, towards the same goal, which is good, which is beneficial to all. That is what virtuosity is all about. So the clouds are like virtuous, compassionate people. The clouds want everyone to benefit. However, lightning in this case has been compared to an unchaste woman in the sense she goes from one cloud to another, not staying in one place. So in this context, Sukhdev Maharaj is saying that it's so very important for men and women to be faithful to each other because such unchasteness or unchastity, it does not lead to a harmonious way of living. There's a lot of disturbance. Already the material world has so many disturbances. On top of that, if there is not proper faith, an atmosphere of faith, then the mind really becomes troubled. And virtuosity cannot be well practiced. Even virtuous men become disturbed. This is also a wonderful analogy, very beautiful. This is where something very interesting is being explained by Sukhdev Maharaj. It's about a rainbow. He says, when the curved bow of Indra, or the rainbow, appeared in the sky, which had the quality of thundering sound, it was unlike ordinary bows because it did not rest upon a string. Similarly, when the Supreme Lord appears in this world, which is the interaction of the material qualities, he is unlike ordinary persons because he remains free from all material qualities and independent of all material conditions. You see, for a bow to be curved, it is necessary that it be tied with a string, or the bow will never curve. But in this case, Indra's bow, the Indradhanush or the rainbow, does not have a string attached to it, but still it is curved. This is the beauty of Indra's bow. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes from his own abode into this material world and interacts with all the living entities as an ordinary human being. But just because he walks and talks like an ordinary human being does not mean that he rests. His existence is dependent on the 24 elements of material nature. It does not mean that he is also bent by the strings of the modes of material nature. He has no strings attached. He does not suffer the same action and reaction cycle as all the other living entities, because he is a supremely independent and all-powerful and always pure personality of Godhead. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illumined by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which itself is illumined by the consciousness of the pure soul. Sometimes now, because the rains are there, please try to see if you can have this, you know, vision that the moon is there surrounded by the clouds, and you can see, you know, the prism-like effect of the clouds. You can see the light breaking up into different colors in the clouds. It looks very beautiful, isn't it? But it's an illusion. The illusion is that the pure moon's rays are coming filtered through the clouds. It appears beautiful, but those are filtered rays. Those are not the original rays of the moon. Similarly, when the pure soul, which has got all beautiful qualities, when it manifests to the coverings of material nature, sometimes it appears, such a person may appear to be very knowledgeable, very intelligent, very attractive, but it's all an illusion. Why? Because it is not the pure qualities of the soul coming through, but it is a pure quality of the soul filtering through the modes of material nature. So however intelligent, however powerful, however famous, however beautiful, however knowledgeable, or however renounced a person may be, covered by the modes of material nature, they are simply reflections of the original qualities of the soul. But they are not the real qualities of the soul. It is just being filtered through the modes. The peacocks become festive and cried out a joyful greeting when they saw the clouds arrive. Just as people distressed in household life feel pleasure when the pure devotees of the infallible Supreme Lord visit them. We are just going to run through this now. There's three or four more analogies. The trees had grown thin and dry, but after they drank the newly fallen rainwater through their feet, their various bodily features blossomed. Similarly, one whose body has grown thin and weak from austerity again exhibits his healthy bodily features upon enjoying the material objects gained through that austerity. This one is important again. The cranes continued dwelling on the shores of the lakes, although the shores were agitated during the rainy season. Just as materialistic persons with contaminated minds always remain at home despite the many disturbances there. Sometimes, generally cranes always, they spend most of their time close to lakes. Now lakes, only in the drawings of children appear flat, and the shores are also flat. But if you actually see lakes, then the banks are, they are inclined, they are at an inclination. So what happens is when the rains come in, there are generally mudslides taking place. The dirt, sometimes trees or branches, sometimes rocks, they come down falling into the lake. And that is where the swans and the cranes, generally the cranes are. All the cranes do is, when the mudslide comes in, they just jump, hop away to another place close by. Cranes are compared to people in householder life, not just householder life. Householder life here means those whose interest is only in the material way of living. There are so many difficulties coming in householder life. There are so many tribulations and pains. So many times people in householder life always say, "Ab bahut ho gaya. Sab chhod chhad ke jaane ka man karta hai. This is too much. Just want to give up everything and go away." But it never happens. Tomorrow is another day. Tomorrow will bring in something different. No, another mudslide will come. It's going to come. So, although the time has come that one can hand over all responsibility to someone more younger and energetic, it's very difficult to do it. It's very difficult for a father to hand over everything to the son. And it is very difficult for the mother to hand over everything to the daughter-in-law. They don't do it. So difficult. And then, the same thing that has been going on for 30, 35 years goes on continuing even in the old age. So that is what is being explained through this slide. With contaminated minds always remain at home despite the many disturbances there. When Indra sent forth his rains, the flood waters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields. Just as in Kali Yuga, the atheist false theories break down the boundaries of Vedic injunctions. Sometimes there are dikes. Dikes means, they raise up the earth in the fields to allow the water to be stored in the fields. But sometimes the rush of the water is so powerful, it breaks those boundaries, those bandh that are there. Breaks and the dikes are broken down and the whole field is flooded. Everything gets flooded. Similarly, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, the boundaries of religion or dharmas sometimes are just broken down. It just happens. It becomes so very difficult to practice spiritual life. The clouds impelled by the winds released a nectarian water for the benefit of all living beings, just as kings instructed by the Brahmana priest dispensed charity to the citizens. Previously, the clouds were compared to kings exacting taxes and giving benefits. Here, another important point is mentioned, that when the kings are properly guided by Brahmanas who are selfless, then they give charity. They freely give charity to the citizens. Thus, when the Vrindavan forest had become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, jambu means jamun, Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends and accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy. So when we, you know, when our lives are such, this is the summary. When we live our lives in such a way that they are nice fruits of our love and labor to offer, then Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and especially with Balaram, who gives strength in spiritual life, they come into this forest. They come to enjoy. The cows had to move slowly because of the weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. This is a very beautiful scene in Vrindavan, because the Braja cows, they always have so much milk, and it is such a heavy weight. If generally when weight is there, you want to carry it on your back, right? You want to give it the most support. But here is their udders which are hanging down. And it really takes a lot of effort for them to just keep standing. But then Krishna calls them, they run despite all. And their udders are moving. They sometimes their legs get caught up in it. Doesn't matter. They always run to Krishna. A very beautiful scene of Vrindavan. The cows running towards Krishna. The Lord saw the joyful aborigine girls of the forest, the trees dripping sweet sap, and the mountain waterfalls whose resounding indicated that there were caves nearby. When it rained, the Lord would sometimes enter a cave or the hollow of a tree to play and to eat roots and fruits. Right? Therefore, Govinda Das, I think so, as, you know, or who is that poet who said, Mere man man mandir mein ek baar to aajao giridhari. That is like a kandara, a cave within our heart. Our heart is like a cave, it is guhya. Guha, cave is known as guha, means guhya. So our heart is a cave. And Krishna will enter there when he feels that he can come and enjoy in that cave. Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home. Krishna only eats from home. He's very particular about that. Sent from home in the company of Lord Sankarshan and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. It's a real picnic there. Stone suddenly manifests like a dining table. You don't have to go to the furniture shop to buy it. Such a carefree life, isn't it? And then the friends and everyone are waiting. What has Krishna got? And Krishna shares it with them. Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls, calves and cows sitting on a green grass and grazing with closed eyes. And he saw that the cows were tired from the burden of their heavy milk bags. Thus, observing the beauty and opulence of Vrindavan's rainy season, a perennial source of great happiness, the Lord offered all respect to that season which was expanded from his own internal potency. Krishna is appreciating his energy. And this is the nature of Krishna. Any chance that he gets to appreciate someone, he always does it. In fact, he makes occasions or he creates situations where people can render service, his energy can bring about something very wonderful, and Krishna can appreciate it. So although it is Krishna's energy, she functions according to his desire. Because she is functioning to please him, Krishna appreciates that particular quality. Just as he appreciates the quality of a devotee to render service unto him. Because a devotee has a choice. One can go and render service to anyone. India has a population of 6 crore or more, 10 crores. We can go to anyone and render service. But we choose Krishna. Krishna appreciates that. And he becomes very much pleased. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So that is the description of the rainy season in Braj Dham. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. So with this rainy season coming in, hopefully all these meditations of caves, clouds, thunder, lightning, sun, rivulets, swans, cows, sufficient. That is why Shukdev Goswami has given scriptures. It is so that we have sufficient, that at every moment we can see every situation connected to Krishna. Every situation can be connected to Krishna. And if you are thinking what will happen after the rainy season, autumn will come. And that is also described by Shukdev Maharaj. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna. Jai.